podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to the Wiz and Ashes Daily Podcast, sponsored by Travel Bag. Crazy holidays packed full of memories since 1979. I'm not sure quite what we've just witnessed, but I'm your host, Ben Gardner. And joining me, I have Bharat Sundaresan, Crick Buzz's magnificently maimed Australia correspondent. Where do we begin with that?
With my magnificent mane, of course. And yours, you're not too badly maned yourself, Ben.
Enough of that. I guess we should probably talk about Ben Stokes for a little
maybe,
bit.
Maybe, yeah, we should. We have to. Well, once again, like this summer, we have to talk about Ben Stokes. Yeah. It's just that, I don't know, he just seems like the guy who is the last man to leave every party, and he never leaves without...
Yeah, without doing exactly what everything he can.
I was going to say he doesn't go down with a fight, but then I realized that might not go down too well with the...
But yeah, when he gets in that mood, it does take something incredible to get him out. I was thinking like the Mitchell Stark ball in the World Cup when he was in a similar mood to today, and like it felt like almost everything conspired against Australia to not get him out in a way.
Yeah, I mean, but the interesting thing is he only started, like, you know, slamming the ball everywhere after he'd batted 200 balls. It was, like, in the overall context, it is arguably one of the best-paced test innings of all time in a run chase. Like, yeah, there's always going to be that debate whether is this the greatest test innings ever, is this the greatest run chase ever. But I think the way he paced it in a match where England had been bowled out for 67, after the amount of bowlers after the amount of overs he had bowled, that you can see I'm still like shaking from that game. So it was just a miraculous innings, really, and England needed a miracle, and it was miracle man Ben Stokes himself.
And such as some of the shots, like, because it was basically he just kicked off as just in the last wicket partnership. You think he scored something like 72 off his last 42 balls, and that was all in the company of Jack Leach. I mean, there was, well, I don't know what the best shot was. Probably it wasn't quite a switch hit, was it? Because his hands didn't switch. A reverse hit out of the rough over either deep square leg or backward point, whichever you like, for six against like one of the best test off spinners of all time.
Absolutely. And someone who had gone past Dennis Lilly's record in this game. It was supposed to be all about the Aussies and Nathan Lyon. And yeah, like you said, he hit it out of the rough. And that takes a lot of doing. Most people would have just like, you know, padded it away. But to literally pull off a near switch hit to that. And then he hit it a long way as well. He hit a lot of sixes today. But that, I think, when the long... Because there were a couple which just kind of flew over the diving Aussie fielders. But this one just went a long, long way. Just an extraordinary innings. But if you think about it, he did have a lot of opportunities in the World Cup to pull off run chases. But he never, ever finished them. Not even in the final. I know you're English, but let's not forget England did not win the World Cup. Like, you know, they won it on boundaries. So maybe he hit a couple of boundaries more than New Zealand did. But he could not pull off a run chase. So it clearly meant a lot to him, the way he celebrated and the way he went about it. And for me, the images that will stand out are every time Jack Leach faced the ball, Ben Stokes did not watch. Like, I've never seen stuff like that happen before. So he was at the non-striker's end. And like, you know, he wasn't watching it till the last minute. It's incredible.
Is there anything Australia could have done? Did they bowl badly? Could they have changed their bowlers? I mean, obviously there are things they could have done in that there was that horrendous miscatch. There's a good picture going around, actually. I mean, there's loads of great stuff on Twitter. I'm sort of like, everyone is raking in the likes. But there is one picture of like Tim Payne and I think David Warner running towards Nathan Lyon with glee on his face. You can see the ball having just gone through his legs as he's dropped it. So there was that. There was Marcus Harris, poor Marcus Harris, having come into this test, who dropped it in the deep. There was the LBW, which they went up for a very expensive one that was just like desperation, really thinking like, well, we may as well take it because why not? And then the next over, that was why not. So obviously there were things they could have done, but from a tactical point of view, from a bowling point of view? Was there anything really?
See, but that's the thing. Like we were talking about some time back, that cricket is a team sport. It often comes down to individuals who win and lose matches. Mm-hmm. And they were just rattled. Like the way he was striking the ball. And like I said, it wasn't like some late order. If Jofra Archer had done what Ben Stokes did today, I'm sure they would have found a way to get him out.
Yeah.
But it was just someone who was so well set. And like, yeah, you can look at it and say, yeah, Australia gave up too soon in getting him out. But they tried to get him out for 200 deliveries and failed. So tactically, what else could you have done but spread the field out? And like, but Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood have played a lot of one-day cricket, but they are bowlers who do get rattled when batsmen go after them. Mm-hmm. And this is such an unnatural scenario as well, right? Where you have every man on the boundary. And like Tim Payne said, maybe that's where he got it wrong. Like maybe he should have at least read into the bowler's mindset and what they wanted to do. Because generally when you see it, and you're attacking fast bowlers. Pat Cummins is an attacking fast bowler. It was Josh Hazlewood's test match before Ben Stokes came in. Mm. He nearly took 10 wickets. He could have.
Yeah.
And then see every man on the fence, you become defensive yourself. Mm. And even the ball that he got the winning shot off, it was short and wide with all the guys in. You can see that they were just rattled. Even the DRS call, it was just one of those, okay, we can't get Ben Stokes out clearly, so let's try everything and get Jack Leach up. It happens. It happens in cricket where you, one guy just has that special day and leaves the opposition rattled more than anything.
So do you think the way they were rattled, does it make you worried about their sort of prospects going forward? Was this a team sort of worried about their chances to win the Ashes slipping away? Or is this a team just wilting in the face of a great test knock, do you think?
Well, they've spoken so much about using the blueprint of the 2004 tour of India. Like Justin Langer harped on about it. He was part of that tour and they won in India after many, many years. So, and they've come here with a plan. They've come here with processes. Oh, processes. I sound like a cricketer all of a sudden. But yeah, they have come with a plan and they did stick to it till the very end. Till those last 42 balls, they had done exceptionally well. They were just within touching distance of having retained the urn. But will Australia get rattled to an extent where they'll struggle for the rest of the series? At least they're fortunate enough to have a 10-day break between now and Manchester. If this had happened in Lords, then whoever you are, you would have struggled to get back up at Leeds if it would have happened. But because there's a 10-day gap and there is the Derby game and this time to maybe bring in a couple of new guys in. Maybe Mitchell Starc gets a game now in Manchester. Yeah. And Pat Cummins has played 3 test matches on the bounce after having played the World Cup. So, yeah, towards the end, you could make out he was a little all over the place. So, I think Australia, the way they have been so far on this tour, will recover. Tim Payne seems to be the sort of guy who admitted to having messed up towards the end. Quite admirable. He didn't make excuses for anything, which is quite good. So I think this Australian team with Justin Langer at the helm will not get rattled to that extent where suddenly you'll just they'll be bowled out for 60 like England.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned Mitchell Starc. I guess you're always a better player when you're out of the team. And in a way, you're not going to have... that can't happen for a third time. So you can't pick a guy just because you might be in a sort of one-day situation and need someone who can bowl Yorkers and keep his cool. But... Well, I guess, do you think he should come in? And what other changes do you think they'll make? I mean, especially with Smith coming in, who will he come back in for?
Well, opening is a problem for them. David Warner's made 160, but their openers have been pretty ordinary throughout this. Mm-hmm. And Warner could have been out so many times, which he himself admitted to. So, opening's a problem, but they've tried Bancroft, they've tried Harris. Now, you can't technically drop Harris after just one game. You'll have to, unless they just decide to open with Khawaja, who himself has not had a great tour, and then bring Smith in. Because you can't drop Manus Labuschagne. Because he's played 3 innings, he's top scored in each one of them. So you can't drop him. So Smith obviously comes back. Oh, I pity the Derbyshire bowlers and the support staff will be there. He's going to... Yeah, going to be some pain. There'll be some weary shoulders after that game. So will Mitchell Starc come in? Before the series, I had predicted he won't play a test because he was the only... He's the only guy among the 6 that they brought here who has the potential to leak runs. And Australia seemed to have come with a plan. Like I said, it's all about balance. It's about control and discipline. So, Starc. But having said that, they did leak a lot of runs with the second new ball today. Mm-hmm. And like, they didn't bowl too well with the second new ball. Everybody's going to talk about that's the amazing thing about Test cricket, especially a Test like this. People will focus so much on that, on the last 20 minutes, but there's so much that happened, like, you know, in just, the three in and a half day. Days before that.
And,
like,
and in the day as well.
And in the day as well.
Just like what? So Australia started with, what, four maidens in a row before England got off the mark. Then Joe Root gets out before the second new ball, and you think, oh, England are going here. And then Bairstow's knock. I mean, I actually don't have at hand what it was. And it wasn't a half century, but it was crucial, really, in taking the initiative back, especially against the second new ball. I mean, I think most people kind of assumed England would kind of crumble then. And then obviously Ben Stokes running out, Joss Butler as well. Yeah, Chris Wokes playing probably the worst shot of the lot.
Yeah, it was one of those. Chris Wokes has not had a good Test match.
No,
I think
good
he can
series,
do with a break.
Yeah,
but I don't want to say this about Joe Root's dismissal, though. It's a lesson to everyone in England. If you are planning to leave anything, whether it's your crease or, you know, other stuff, you better know why you're leaving, or you get stranded and, like, yeah, excellent. Look a little embarrassed.
And then David Warner took a brilliant catch there, and then dropped one later. There was just so much to unpack.
I don't know how many people will remember that England were bowled out for 67 day before,
yeah,
and we thought
the lowest first inning score in sort of bowled out for to win a Test since 1887.
There you go.
It's incredible.
Yeah, when they never played cricket on Sundays. Imagine if, like, yeah, we didn't have cricket on Sundays. Yeah. Most exciting things these days in England seem to happen on Sundays for some reason.
So we should talk. I guess let's talk about the two spinners a little bit. So Jack Leach, who was obviously the greatest one not out in history. just the way the crowd would stand up and applaud every time there was a back foot defence or a forward defence. It was just amazing. The way he took his glass off and wiped them off between each ball. He knows how to endear himself to a crowd. But probably also talk about Nathan Lyon, who has he been a little bit below par the last three innings or so, despite obviously having gone past that record today?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a Nathan Lyon pitch, really. I mean, a Nathan Lyon pitch is one where there is bounce, but there is like bite, but there is also grip. Mm. And if you notice this pitch, it was coming on a lot more, especially today and yesterday. There was turn, yes, but it wasn't like edge batsman where it was like gripping and, like, you know, jumping at batsman, because that's when you bring in short leg and leg slip, which is where he gets most of his wickets. But if you noticed, not many balls really, like, popped up in that direction, and Ben Stokes could just literally clear his right leg and swing. And again, maybe a tactical mistake by Tim Payne. I mean, it was basically a gamble he was taking with, like, you know, bowling Nathan Lyon to him. That's when the momentum really shifted. But Vliet would disappoint. I mean, he is a world-class spinner. He's second, like, you know, he's number three behind Glenn McGrath, Shane Warne. Who would have thunk it, really, like, 5 years ago? So
there's no question about his place, is there? It's more just a slight.
There is nobody else. Like, Marnus
war,
a lot of players. yeah. No, I think that's the thing. It's one of those, and I was just about to write that line upstairs, but it's one of those misadventures where you, honestly, you're better served if you do not, get tempted to indulge in a postmortem. You'll never end. There's so much that you could have changed. Yeah. But eventually, I think you just have to, like, take your hat off to Ben Stokes and say, well played, mate. Like, you know, what else could I have done? We tried everything. Yeah, we made mistakes. I mean, obviously, you don't lose unless you make mistakes. Nathan Lyon, we'll think about it similarly. You did see towards the end, it was, we were discussing this earlier, like, you know, he hit the ground like it was like one of those Football World Cup knockouts. Yeah. And then Tim Payne went and, like, picked him up. And I asked him about that. I mean, I asked Payne about that in the press conference. And he said that, yeah, he apparently told Lyon that, like, you know, I want you to look strong here so that the younger members, like, you know, which is quite like a point really for me. So, yeah, he would be down. He could have had Ben Stokes out. Like, again, we go back to ifs and buts and whens and could have and should have, but these things happen in Test matches like this.
Yeah, it's another thing you should look at, actually, is that there's a video of the winning moment, a slow-mo from side on, and you see as soon as Ben Stokes hits it, he celebrates before anyone in the crowd celebrates. He just knows, and he's so in the zone that he, like, he kind of knew, like, almost as it was bowled that it was going for four. It was another one to look out for.
And absolutely. And that's when you see Lyon dropping to the floor as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Another moment, I don't know how many people noticed, when Ben Stokes got to his 100, you see Jack Leach walking towards him to congratulate him, and Ben Stokes just asked him to go back. Mm. Yeah, and, like, you know, you could make out he was in that kind of zone. Like, he Yeah. And maybe it goes back to the World Cup. Like, you know, there was the game against Sri Lanka, and I think there was another game. Was it against Pakistan? I don't remember where. It came down to him, and he couldn't finish it off. And
well, the Australia game as well, wasn't there? Yeah.
Oh, the Australia game as well, correct. And in the final, like we said, he did not pull it off. Yeah. England, he did not pull it off. So, I'm sure that all that was like bearing on his mind. And, you know, Headingley 1981, Headingley 2019, like,
I'm sure he wasn't thinking about an amazing ground for it, yeah. And actually, I felt there was something... I think there's something at Headingley. I think partly it's just because it can be quite a fast scoring ground and a ground where you kind of have to pitch it up to get your rewards. But the game can get away from you really quickly as a bowling side. It happened in 2014 when we played Sri Lanka and Matthews and Harath. But on that partnership, it happened on day one with Labuschagne and Warner. And obviously England was searching a bit, but you do have to keep trying to pitch it full here. And it happened with that new ball. And that's it. But it's just, another incredible day on a pretty incredible ground. And it is, that new stand is amazing as well. Did you get a chance to go up there and look out from it?
No.
It's quite a view up there.
I've been busy working in the first book. I mean, but you know how I work. I keep walking around and like... No, but if you look at great test matches around the world, they generally happen on grounds with like which have quick outfields and a true-ish pitch, whether it's like 2001 Calcutta or... the games in South Africa, maybe the Brian Larache's in Barbados, they're all like fast scoring grounds because, like you correctly said, you want games to turn quickly and that's when you get exciting encounters. I mean, on slow, dry, some pitches that you find in India, you might get an but it will be an exciting game of another kind. Not like one team dominating for 3 days and then one team like jumping back and fighting back and like, yeah, it is definitely... a bigger comeback than 1981 for sure. I mean, teams don't get bowled out for 67, and the way they were bowled out as well, it was like it wasn't like they dragged on for 60 overs and got bowled out for 67. They were like blown away in 27 overs. So it was a fresh Australian bowling attack as well in the second inning. So to chase 362, and like people have forgotten that it was 362. They nearly chased 400. Yeah. Now everybody's talking about the last 70 runs, but Joe Root and Joe Denley played a huge role yesterday. I mean, when you look at it, and I thought Joe Root batted the best he has in a long time in Test cricket anyway. So there are so many elements to this Test match. We could just keep talking about it for the next 10 days before we do it all over again.
Yeah. All right, well, we should probably end it there, I guess. We've concluded it probably wasn't the best Test innings of all time. Maybe not even the best Test innings of the year, which might be Kusal Pereira's 153 in weirdly similar situations. A last week at partnership, just a little bit bigger against an attack, probably just as good, and in even more unlikely circumstances. Sri Lanka never win outside of Sri Lanka, let alone in South Africa, where no touring teams ever win.
Destroyed by Australia. Like I was there watching them being destroyed. Like I mean, when you see a batsman get retired, hurt, walk in, and then replace another batsman who's been retired, or you know, a team is in trouble. That's where they were before they went to South Africa and pulled that off. So definitely, Kusal Pereira's innings should be rated higher. I know, like, because we are in England, everything that happens in England always gets highlighted a lot more than what happens around the world. I'm sorry, Ben. I'm just saying pot shots at your kind.
And it probably wasn't the greatest Test match ever. I think between two teams who are still neither of them are great teams. So you want the greatest Test match ever to be between two properly classed teams. But I think we can probably conclude that Ben Stokes is on his way to becoming one of England's greatest ever cricketers and is maybe having the greatest summer an English cricketer has ever had.
Definitely, and just says so much about the character of that man. I mean, he's done some silly stuff in his life. I mean, and he's never stayed down though. I mean, I was there in Calcutta when remember the name Brathwaite happened, and I remember seeing him the next morning at the team hotel. I'd gone to meet a couple of West Indian cricketers, and he was there. Sat, I think his partner was with him on one of those like side tables in the hotel. Like, you know, it was like he'd been bereaved. Nobody knew what to say to him. He was completely broken. You know, World Cup final. Yeah. Then Bristol happens. Then he still comes back from that. And then the World Cup final happens. And like, you know, he keeps coming back in that final, like, you know, the super over, all that put together. And here, like, you know, there is something special about him. Like, he is an X factor cricketer that England have not had. Like, they talk about Andrew Flintoff a lot, but I would rate Ben Stokes higher.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he's getting close to being above both of them as well. I think we should probably end it there. But thanks very much for joining me. We'll get you on again sometime.
Hopefully talking about like long hair and not cricket.
Okay. I've been your host, Ben Gardner. I've been joined by Barrett Sundaresan, Cricket Buzz Australia correspondent. This has been the Wisden Ashes Daily podcast, sponsored by Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. And please, if you enjoyed it, we do a weekly podcast every week, so you can subscribe to listen to that. And on the podcast app, on Spotify, and please also tell your friends. Thanks.
Podcast Network.